One, two, one.
You're listening to the Talking Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo!
I said cast.
Cast.
We're from the TalkingSpirit.com website. We can go for all of our anime, new and old, great community, the former links at the top, social media links on the right side, and all that good stuff. And yes, today's episode is a discussional podcast episode. We talk about the news that seems important to us, which should be important to you because it's important to us because it's important to you. And then dive into our community and ask some questions from our community members, which thankfully they came through.
And just I've seen a couple.
It just took us whining and begging. We're not desperate for questions or anything. But yes, anything special to go over before we dive in the news?
Any goodness, I wish.
No games that you've been playing that are interesting?
I found one called Factory Town, and I've been goofing off with that one. That one's kind of fun. Was a little bit.
Huh? Satisfactory, another Satisfactory game?
Yeah, going back to the 2D, kind of 2.5D. Where it's actually laying it out on a map and everything.
Oh, like SimCity.
Kind of like, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And it has some kind of, it has some interesting systems in there. It's got a kind of a mana system to, and that was kind of an interesting little tweak to it. And it basically is, instead of kind of electricity or anything like that, you're doing this kind of getting mana power to different houses and stuff like that. So it was kind of an interesting system that they had there. Mm-hmm. Doing kind of farming and stuff like that, and you can set up little farms and build up your resources that way instead of... So yeah, it is kind of like Satisfactory in some respects, but very different in other respects.
Yeah, SimCity and Satisfactory had a baby. Mm-hmm. And then, like, some weird fantasy stuff got mixed in with it.
Yeah.
They had, like, a three thing going on, you know? I platinum Final Fantasy VII Remake, yay!
I heard!
The stupid pull-up thing was the last thing I did. I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. And I'm going to try one more time before bed, and then I got it. And I was like, okay, good. Got my platinum. I'm happy. So now I'm not sure if I want to go to play Final Fantasy XV, finally, or if I'm going to do the original Final Fantasy VII on the Switch.
I would do 7. That way you can you'd be able to see what things were different. I mean,
mind.
Yeah. There is at least one thing that I noticed really quickly that was different, and I only glimpsed it, things that every once in a while I'd poke in to see what Andrew was doing on that, and the avalanche seems to have vastly gotten bigger.
Well, that's actually part of the story, is the how big avalanche is. The big key things was a few characters that you don't quite know what happened to them, which is a little bit different. And, yeah, the ghost thing that show up really early. That was definitely a big different thing.
Ghosts?
Yeah, ghosts show up.
Weird, I guess you'll ghost have to things. Explain it later.
It's part of the big storyline, so. Yeah. I don't know. It was really good. I really did love it. I got 98 hours into it before I finally platinumed it, so.
Yeah,
I got plenty of time out of that thing. Well, that's funny because it's one of those ones where you don't really feel like there'd be a replayability. But yeah, as soon as I finish it, I wanted to go back into it and continue it. The only thing that bogs down for the replay is the parts where you're walking and it's telling a story. It's like, come on, just go. I got to play through this damn chapter 3 times to get all the dresses. I need this to go faster. That was probably the only big negative for me, was that whole thing. I didn't think I would be able to do hard mode, but I actually pulled it off. So I guess you just have to max out your materia and get them situated perfectly, and it works out. But yeah, looking forward to 2. Next year, probably, hopefully. I don't know how long it's going to take them to get to part 2, because they're going to have to create some type of... I don't think they're going to do open world, but I know they're going to have to do something to make it feel bigger.
Did you say that they have spoken Japanese? Or mm-hmm. So, okay.
Maybe it's pretty cool, because they have like an AI system that they use to lip sync it, and actually look really good. Like, cool. Like most games, like if you play like Resident Evil 2, for example, they lip sync to the English. But if you play it in Japanese, the lips are not matching. But in this one, it actually matches and everything. So it's kind of cool that you change the languages and it actually matches it. They put a lot of effort in that game. It's really surprising how much, you know, they had the love and passion in it.
I goofed off with Sword Art Online on the Switch. I got the Fatal Bullet, and I got Hollow Realization, and I've been goofing off. I kind of like the Hollow Bullet. The Gun Gale Online one. Mm-hmm. That one was kind of fun. I like the systems that they have in there. I
really enjoyed the ones that I played, because I played quite a bit of the original one. I think the second one I played a little bit of. It's got a fun combat system and everything, and the character, getting into some of the characters, like I mentioned before, his sister, Lifa, whatever her original name is, I never care for her as a character in the show, and when I play that game and you really get into it, actually gets into like what happened between him going into the game and the point that technically the game starts, where she gets into the game. And it actually goes in the whole thing where how much she was spending time at the hospital with him and just, you know, caring for him. And it's like, holy crap, they made me fall in love with this character. Like, they expanded this character for me rather than her just showing up in the second game and going, I'm you know, I do sword play and stuff.
The Hollow Realization, I love it. The only problem is their cutscenes are god awful long. I mean, yeah.
That's most of those games. just tons
ridiculous.
Of but yeah, I do enjoy them. I just, at some point, it just kind of, it gets grindy at some point, and then I just got kind of lose interest. And that's usually what happens with those games. Because I think I got pretty far into the floors in the original one. I think
that's
pretty
close to done. That's the first one, right? It's not Hollow Realization.
I played a little bit of the Hollow Realization. The original one, I got pretty close to the end of it.
Because that's the one that I kind of wanted to play, but it's not on the Switch right now, so, yeah.
That's the sucky thing, is I love that they're bringing these games to the Switch, but I hate whenever they bring, like, a sequel. Like, they're doing that with Trails of Cold Steel, and it's like, why don't you bring the other ones over? I don't want to just jump into 3. Yeah. They're like, oh, you can play 3. I'm like, no, you don't. The whole impact of playing through the other two is going to be lost. Why wouldn't you want to play through it all? It's a struggle, but... Hopefully they'll.
I looked at that one a few times. There's one called Mana Factory, something like that. And I was
Rune Factory.
And I've been really debating on getting that one.
I think those are pretty self set. They're kind of like I think they're like Etrian Odyssey and Final Fantasy, where they're all separate.
Yeah, and that one's got an entire building system that I like the little building system games, so that's why I kind of tend to get sucked into those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, we got the final Aria came in.
Yeah.
So we get to finally watch the last season of that and do a review of that one, so yay. Actually looking forward to seeing the finale of that.
Yeah.
Technically probably not the finale, because they got another one coming here soon. The remake, they're bringing back Arya here later this year, and we'll be ready for it, thankfully. Yay! But yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, let's jump into the news. We have the first one we have is Twin Engine has launched a crowdfunding for a featured film length of Kura Yukaba, which is the Shigeyoshi Sukahara and Twiflo's original anime project. So they're looking to do a full feature length of it. They are shooting for 20 million yen, which is about $188 US dollars if you were to convert that. But yeah, they're aiming to raise that by August 27th, which will make it a feature-length film, which is, I guess, okay. We're always mixed on the crowdfunding thing, so I guess if it gives them... Well, technically Twin Engine is a publisher, so it's not like it's a studio trying to get money to make their own project, so... I don't know. It's kind of a different story for me. I like when... I'm okay when, like, studios themselves kind of go after crowdfunding just to kind of fund projects they're passionate about, but that's about it for me.
I'm still mixed on it. I don't like the idea of...
putting the financial burden upon other people.
Yeah.
Than fans.
It's a risk-reward thing. If you're going to take the risk, you need to you get to reap the reward. If you do not take the risk, you should not receive the reward. Sorry, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine in a sense when it's a case of, okay, well, technically, if you fund a certain amount, you get something out of it. So you're technically just, like the whole Escaflowne thing, it was like a glorified pre-order. But at the same time, it's like you also get a lot of risk there that, or... Technically, in those cases, the only risk is to the crowdfunding backers, because they could end up getting either something that wasn't something that was promised that was not delivered, or they might get a product that is damaged or something like that. And so all the risk is upon those that actually back it. The company themselves have zero risk involved because they've already paid for it. So it is. Yeah, we talk about this every damn time, so people are probably sick of us hearing us talk about our thoughts on crowdfunding, but hey, if people are passionate about this project being fully funded, it is out there. It's technically, what is the company that they're using for crowdfunding? Motion Gallery Platform, so I don't know if we can access it overseas, but if you can, go ahead and back it.
There is an aspect to it that I do like. Please don't misunderstand me. I do love the fact that this is undermining a system,
is it?
In a way, it is. How? Because it's undermining the,
or what part? I'm assuming
it's undermining the risk. It's undermining the risk reward structure.
Okay.
I do like that it's changing the way that it's forcing something forward that we need to do. Everything in structurally, we always need to be revamping and changing and streamlining and getting better. The problem is I don't see...
But is it undermining it to a positive?
Huh?
Is it undermining it in a way that is positive? That's the question.
I hope it does. I'm not good at seeing the future on this one, because like I said, if you put out the risk, you should receive the reward. If you are not putting out the risk, you should not receive a reward for it. I.e., these guys are making bank off of the fact that you yourself, the person who wants to purchase this anime, is taking the risk. They have no risk involved, and yet they're still making a god-awful amount of money. That should not work that way. That's breaking the entire system.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing to kind of note is I don't really technically believe that $180,000 is going to be enough to make a full... I mean, it doesn't technically say how long this is. It does say feature length, which usually means an actual at least 50 minutes, right? More than 40 minutes. So if it's more than 40 minutes animation, I don't know that it's technically only going to cost them $180,000 to in equivalents to do. So they probably still have some risk there. So it's important to kind of note that.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. And when we were first talking about it, it's really weird. We want them to be able to expand out that, but like Andrew was mentioning, I mean, at what point do you get, what were you saying?
I think probably what they're shooting for here with such an amount for that, like I said, I don't think that technically is something that would actually fund a 40-minute long film, is they're probably just looking to... It is a positive thing in a sense, because usually when you get with producers and then there's this risk that's involved if they try to get, you know, some sort of supply applying to it. People that are getting in there, say that the production committee is where you're bringing in multiple people to pay into it, all expecting something positive out of that. They're not doing it out of their own free will. They're not doing it because they're going to see, you know, the anime itself making them money. It is for some type of benefit. They come in there. The one that's easy to kind of represent is the record labels. A record label coming into there is doing it for the sake of getting their music in there and selling music. So they offer their money, and in exchange, it's basically an advertisement for their music. So with something like that, there is a positive here if this is what they're doing. If Twin Ninja is coming in here and doing this for the sake of going, well, we need a little extra money, and we don't want to bring in somebody that's going to want them to change our image of what we want to do with this, there is something cool there to think that maybe they did turn down somebody that would get their hand in the cookie jar by allowing the fans themselves to be able to pay into it. So it's always a mixture of what can be positive and what can be negative.
The customer service is what I was thinking of. You had mentioned the idea of getting bad discs or something like that. There's nothing that you can really do about it because it's effectively you're completely at the behest of whatever they decide that they're going to provide. You, by taking away that risk, they have no incentive to provide a quality product. That all they are incentivized to do is do the base minimum. That's why losing that reward structure, that risk reward structure is in one respect, I like the fact that we're pushing it forward, but losing that risk reward incentive takes away the need to do something above and beyond to take care of your customers.
Yeah. And I guess to give people an idea of why Andrew sounds so, I guess, hesitant on this, I've gone through several crowdfundings, and I got burnt several times. One was with technically the two that I got burnt on really badly was the Sekai Project ones, which was Clannad visual novel translation and the Fruit of Grisaia. And the Clannad one, all that stuff pretty much came in damaged. It was very poor quality. The box it came in was just practically folded construction paper. I mean, it was very thin. And then with the Fruit of Grisaia, they improved it by making a better box set out of it, but it took them years to get that done. And everybody was playing it by the time I got it. There was people getting codes. There was people getting to review it. There was people that were, they got stream, the Steam keys got out really quickly. And by the time I got it, it was already cheap. The Escaflowne one, I think it was a good quality. There was a couple of disc problems that they technically replaced. But with that one, by the time I got it, it was on sale on Right Stuff. That's how bad that was. I paid gobs of money for that collector's edition, and literally by the time I got it, it was on Right Stuff for cheaper. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. And that is a really easy way for me to say I will never do a Sekai Project one, I'll never do a Funimation one ever again because of that. You burnt me there. And again, to that point, it was full risk on me. Yeah. They had no risk themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point of it. So that's to give you guys an idea there. So we got to stop talking about crowdfundings.
It makes people mad. I'm sorry if it makes you mad. No, I know you're
probably sick of hearing it. Yeah, we heard the story already. Moving on to fun stuff. We have, Twin Engines, I've enjoyed a lot of stuff they're doing. So don't get me wrong there. I do. Every time I see Twin Engine stuff pop up, it's always something that's just so unique. It's not the typical anime. It's usually adult stories they're trying to tell. I mean, they don't always do well. Like, you know, I want to say Kokoku. Kokoku.
Hey, leave my guy alone.
Had a lot of problems and production problems and animation problems, but it was technically a very unique story to itself. Technically, they flubbed the ending, but not the last ending. I actually enjoyed how it finally concluded. I hate that whole we have to have a big bad in it. That was kind of dorky. Anyways, Right Stuff. Right Stuff and Noizumi Entertainment has announced new releases. They're going to be doing Gundam Build Fighter Special Build on Blu-ray on August 4th. This includes the Fighters, GM's Counterattack, and Tri-Island Wars, as well as Battlelog. I'm guessing that's how you say that. Battlelog?
I don't know. Battlelog? It's a weird-looking word.
That's how it's spelled.
Baluge.
Baluge. Baluge. I think it's battle and log, but it's a weird way of spelling log. Anyways, there are also plans on Galaxy Angel AA and Galaxy Angel S that are going to be shipping on August 4th. So a lot of new releases coming out from there. So definitely look forward to those if you are a fan of Galaxy Angel and Gundam Build Fighters. I think we stopped just before Tri-Island Wars, so we didn't really need to get back in that eventually. We'll probably get a review copy, and then we can get back into it at that point, I guess. So, yeah. Cool stuff. Cool stuff.
They're being nice to me. They know that I'm tired of Gundams.
Gundams. I think we're almost out of Gundams. I think we're like two more left to do. So, kind of sombering news, I guess, is they have announced that Kyoto Animation's Studio One building has finally completed demolition. So that facility is no longer there. They have cleared it out. For those that don't know or don't remember, this was the Studio One for Kyoto Animation that was burnt down by an arsonist and killed 36 people in the actual studio. So I guess it's a good thing. That's kind of symbol that was there that probably reminded people a lot of what happened. That travesty is kind of now gone. So just want to update people on that. Next bit is Tentai Books, a new light novel localization and publishing company, has announced their first releases, or licenses, rather. The first one is There's No Way a Side Character Like Me Would Be Popular, Right? And Welcome to Diner of the Exiles. I know I can probably skip that second one. Probably a food porn show. Let me see if it is a food porn show. I mean, he's got the guy in the back. He looks like he's probably cooking. The girl's probably the waitress. Drives author, blah, blah, blah. Leave everything to the strongest cook of them all. Backstabbed by those he considered friends. Dennis has been exiled from one of the strongest guilds around, the Silverwing Battalion. He doesn't think much of it, though, as he was dying to use his level 99 cooking skills anyways. That's why he decides to leave the city behind and open up a diner in the countryside. While pursuing his dream, Dennis meets Atriel, a girl exiled from her noble household and relegated to slavery until he saves her. The pair open up a diner together, and their first client is an exiled... There's a lot of exiled people here. From a different guild.
That's why it's the Diner of the Exiled.
I guess that makes sense now. I don't know if he has a sign up that says exiled only. That's probably what's happened. From a different guild. How peculiar. But she is not the only customer. A cocky mage that is exiled as well, I'm guessing. And drastically overworked yet underpaid sage become regulars as well. They're probably exiled. The night brings trouble to diners at times, but Dennis's cooking skills and beloved butcher knives cut through trouble with and hunger alike. Thus begins the legend of Dennis and his diner and talk of the town. That was a really long synopsis. The other one, There's No Way a Side Character Like Me Would Be Popular, Right, is my name is Tomoki Yuki, a second year student in high school. I say I'm fairly normal student, save for the fact that everyone avoids me like the plague because I apparently look like I'm out for blood. Like Haruma is the only one. Oh, Ike. I was like, that's a really weird way to continue that sentence. Ike Haruma is the only one that doesn't steer clear of me. He's your typical perfect guy in a sense, every sense. The protagonist with no real flaws that you will see in any given story. Life at school was going... this is sounds like it's talking in first person from her view, I'm guessing. Life at school was going going on as usual until one day Haruma's super popular little sister confesses to me out of the blue. I'm getting this... I have no clue where this is going. Is the girl getting confessed to by the sister?
No, I think that that's supposed to be the...
Oh, he's...
And he is the secondary character to the perfect guy.
Oh, there's two guys? Not...
Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't from the view of the girl.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so he's not popular. There's a popular guy, but his little sister, the popular guy's little sister, confessed to the guy that everybody avoids.
Yes.
Okay. I got it. Though she later clarifies that her feelings towards me are nothing but anything but romantic, and that she has an ulterior motive, I end up accepting the new role as fake boyfriend as a favor to Haruma. Believe it or not, the moment I start going out with her, Haruma's idol tier childhood friend and super hot teacher get involved with me too. Got involved. I'm thinking that's supposed to be got involved with me too. Okay. So that's, yeah, that. Craziness, I guess. So, good luck, Tentai Books, on your new publishing gig. I have to look into that company to find out who they're probably affiliated with or something. Just popping up out of the blue.
Hopefully with J-Novel.
Maybe. Sad news for those that actually probably paid into Symphogear's XD unlimited smartphone game. It's ending its service in July, so I'm sure if you are playing that game, you've been notified of it already, because I think they have technically stopped people from being able to buy Songstones. Yeah, they halted sales on the Songstones, I guess, or the Gacha Stones. So, yeah, it's going to be closed down.
Did that Switch game ever get an announcement, and on what day?
The Switch game?
Genshin Impact?
I don't know that it's got a... I don't know. Probably does have a date. I think we talked about it. It says Switch version coming.
I know it's got a Switch version coming, and it was supposed to be in 2020, but I still haven't heard a date yet, and I was wondering if you got a date yet.
Anyway, Symphogear's XD Unlimited. It's going to be shutting down in July, which is pretty bad, because this literally went global back in February 14th, so that it didn't very much last very long. So hopefully, because of that, not many people put much money in. I remember when it first launched, there was quite a big of discussion about it, just because it literally the launch day they had Attack on Titan collab going for it, which I think I joked about at the time is pretty scary for a company to have to launch with a collab, because they know that there's not enough. And it sucks because with Symphogear, as far as I recall, because I gave up on Symphogear at some point because I think you just couldn't get access to much of what, I mean, every time a Symphogear came out, there was no localization happening for it. It wasn't getting streamed. Nobody was licensing it. And I think they finally licensed like a spinoff of it, but not the original stuff. So I think there was a lot of lack of people having access to Symphogear stuff. So it's just mind boggling to think that they would think a game or a mobile game like this would actually be successful, which is pretty crazy. Yeah, I'm sure it's I think it's the entire thing is shutting down, not just the global. But yeah. Hopefully you guys can get onto apple.com or something like that and get your money back for your Songstones. I mean, that is always a fear with all these games. It's like, technically, yeah, with Crossing Void, we don't know how well it's doing. To yeah, know that true. If I put any money into it, it's not going to burn me later. Well, granted, technically, that game is so kind of free-to-play friendly, there really is no need to actually pay into it. But, yeah, something like Fate Grand Order, how much money I put into that? That would suck if that shut down. Like, it's not like a... And then again, that goes back to the whole thing why I buy physical games. It's like, I want to be able to play these whenever I want, and it sucks to think that that's one of the bad things about mobile games is that technically the servers go down, you can't play it anymore. Or if the app itself or the platforms for the phones themselves go up and the app itself doesn't update, you can't play it. It's just a risky thing to put money into. So be careful out there. Alcana 4 Rhythm Across the Blue. P-Cube has announced their details for its Western release. It is going to release on August 21st in North America and Europe. They're going to have a physical and digital versions of it. The physical limited edition will include a 100-page art book, which is kind of beefy. That's kind of nice. So keep an eye out for that. Get your pre-orders in if you like, because I'm sure those will probably be very limited to how many they make. I think usually, I had to check into some of the P-Cube releases, because like Steins Gate and like that, I'm curious if they're hard to get now, or if they made enough of them, or if they're limited releases. So I don't know if P-Cube is known for limited releases or not.
Yeah, I seen that in the news as well. I was kind of curious about it, but it looks like it's just a visual novel. So I don't know. I like the idea of visual novels. I don't like the time investment on those. That's the only problem.
Mm-hmm. As we sit in the middle of the crosshairs of five visual novels that I have not even touched, really. I played a little bit into the Grisaia. But that was the other problem, is that a lot of the visual novels that I got were PC, which sucks, again, to boot up my PC on my television and play a visual novel on it. I'm more apt to play a visual novel. I can have it in my hands or something like that. So that was the whole reason why I like the idea of a lot of the visual novels going to Switch, is because it's a lot more easier to consume, which is why I really want to get Little Busters and
there's a ten or so Japanese visual novels on Switch right now. I keep seeing them. I keep passing them. I toss them on my wish list usually.
That's what I mean. Which is great as well, is a lot of the visual novels that have gotten localizations or not, they're getting with English options, which is really fantastic. So even if you don't get them over here, you can still get them from, like, PlayAsia or something like that, like I do. Cool stuff. If you, that was one of those funny ones, because I think we talked about that, where if it was going to be a visual novel only game, or if it was actually going to have, like, I knew it was going to have, like, some crazy third person shooting through this game thing and strategy involved, because I think technically that was one of my criticisms of the show itself, was like, this game makes no sense. So I knew it wasn't going to be an actual game, but there are some cute characters in there that would be fun to go routes with. I'm not sure how heavy it is on the routes for each of the girls or what, or if it's just a story. It's got to be routed. There's tons of girls in there. Yep. Funimation has added NIS America titles to their catalog, so if you are a fan of all those titles, I'm sure you'd like to jump on that.
You almost want to say, y'all just leave each other alone.
Leave NIS America alone?
No, leave each other alone. Everybody leave each other alone.
Well, everybody's like cross-pollinization their catalogs. But yeah, that includes Toradora, Cardcaptor Sakura, Love Live, School Idol Project, Nagiyasu, which is a good one as well. Funimation has said that they will have these titles here soon, which includes Bunny Drop, Arcana Under the Bridge, Chronicles of Going Home Club, Daily Lives of Our High School Boys, The Eccentric Family, Genshiken, Ghastly Prince, Inma, Burning Up, Ground Patrol, To Psych Electric Girl, Hanasaki Roha, the movie, the TV series and the movie, If Her Flag Breaks, Kimi no Todake, Ni Todake, sorry, Pandora Hearts, and Yuru Yuri. I've technically watched a lot of those because I used to review a lot of NIS America releases. All really good titles, I think. If Her Flag Breaks is probably the only one that I was kind of like, meh. The rest of those are pretty awesome. Bunny Drop is definitely a must. Hanasaki Roha is technically my favorite anime of all time. I have not watched Kimi no Todake, though. That was before my reviewing days. Where's the Katana Katari?
That one's a great show. I loved it.
No Katana Katari, though, because they dropped that. Like, somebody needs to grab that license, because I know NIS America doesn't have it. Somebody's got to grab Katana Katari. It's literally a Shaft show. No, that was White Fox, wasn't it?
I think we talked about it being White Fox.
Somebody grab that and make a limited edition. Be careful,
you're going to get somebody you don't want to grab it.
Funimation's going to get it. We're going to have some fun discussion about that here soon, so keep that one in mind. So, I don't know why I don't have that one up, but that's fine. Aniplex America has revealed plans for its release of Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba on Blu-ray. Their first limited edition volume of it will include the first 13 episodes and release on June 30th. The second volume release with episodes 14 through 26, and it will ship on November 24th. Both limited editions will include soundtrack, illustration, card set, booklet, and box sleeve with art by Akira Matsushima. So it's all good so far, right?
Sounds like it.
Aniplex USA is partnering with Funimation to release the standard edition, first of which will release on September 2020 and second on January 2021. So here finally is Andrew's theory coming back to life. I totally called this. I knew that eventually... my theory was either they were going to have... either one side or the other would give. Either Aniplex would give Funimation... do all the publishing stuff. All the physical release stuff we'll have Funimation do. I thought the reverse could happen, that Funimation would give all their physical release stuff to Aniplex and we'd get Aniplex pricing instead. But my other theory was the idea that Aniplex would have the high dollar one. And I joked about the idea of Funimation doing a cheaper one, but I never really kind of, I guess, specifically mentioned it being limited edition with Aniplex, standard edition with Funimation. Now, the big, huge question mark that comes in my head right now is, again, I joked about this. Will it be Aniplex? Will they be the same disc? I joked that they would have a crappier quality Blu-ray that Funimation would publish and a better quality Blu-ray that Aniplex would publish. Because an art book isn't much to incentivize somebody to buy a limited edition. And if the price difference there is that grand, why would anybody buy what I typically consider to be... yeah, I like my Garden of Sinners box. I like my Monogatari second season box. I hate all of my other Monogatari boxes with their flimsy little boxes. So... what is the price difference there, and is there going to be any reason why somebody would buy the limited edition from Aniplex? Would they end up cannibalizing themselves? Or is my joke theory going to be true that the Funimation one's going to be a crappier quality?
Yeah, it's possible.
I just hope, I hope and pray that Funimation isn't doing the Blu-ray disc themselves, because I do not trust them to make good quality Blu-rays. Please, Aniplex, continue to make your Blu-rays. Because I'm going to pay Blu-ray Aniplex pricing. I want Aniplex to make the Blu-rays, not Funimation. I don't know. It brings up a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And how it's going to pan out, I don't really know. But this is technically the first case of this, and I'm really curious how it pans out. Are they just... are they playing off the first-come first-come aspect of, like, you're going to buy the limited edition because it releases, what, 3 months sooner? I mean, technically I did that with Silent Voice and Machia, but those were movies. They weren't, you know, the possibility of a $150 box set that Aniplex would release. So it is mucho grande questions for me. I think they were even still... I totally forgot to look at the price when I looked at it earlier. I think they're still technically... Aniplex pricing. So, because I think it said 166, if I remember correctly. 129. It's technically 160, but Right Stuff has the first volume for 129. So yeah, big... didn't they have the... yeah, they don't even list the standard edition yet, so... we will keep an eye on that. I am very... because this is going to be... this is a test bed right here. This is really, truly a test bed. I'm very curious how this ends up panning out. They still list themselves as the publisher, being Aniplex of America, so that's a easy confirmation there. They could still technically have them make the discs at Funimation, but... I am... what I mean by test bed is I'm really curious to see... I don't know that I'll buy this. I do really want it. But I'm curious when this comes out, if people have quality issues with the Blu-rays, what the quality of the box itself is going to be. Is it going to make itself worth the $129 price? And then finally, what does the standard edition from Funimation look like? How much is it going to cost? And if there's a quality difference there as well. This is going to be a really good test bed to see how that works. Anyhow, this stuff fascinates me. Scares me, but fascinates me, so that's why. Media Blasters is set to release Aiken OVA on Blu-ray on July 14th. This is a show that was back in 2004, yeah?
Yeah.
Media Blasters released the DVD back in 2004, so it's a little bit before then. Dinsuke just enrolled at the exclusive Zanshono Academy, eager to participate in extracurricular activities. He never expected to join the mysterious Aiken Club. Oddly enough, all the other members seem to be busty hot co-eds, and most of the club's activity involved wearing bikinis. Despite the visual distractions, Dinsuke isn't interested in anyone but the shy and beautiful Chiharu. Long out of print and DVD, this is kind of a... Yeah, they're making a Blu-ray of it. Yeah, that sounds like an old anime. Mm-hmm. That's all you needed! You want a club and they're busty
sounds
chicks.
Like the perfect harem going on, so...
They do definitely look busty. That one looks horrendously busty.
Yep.
I don't remember if I ever watched that. That one's I don't think so. It looks familiar, though. Moving on. Crunchyroll and Warner Media announced that they will be launching with 17 Crunchyroll titles on May 27th for the HBO Max streaming service. I kind of have to put in here, yes, I had gotten a lot of people tell us, hey, by the way, that's not... because we were kind of discussing, you know, what would be the benefit of them putting Crunchyroll titles on HBO Max. And yes, we completely forgot that they're technically subsidiaries of the same company. So that would be why that happened. But still, the anime streaming service for HBO Max will be streaming Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, ReZero, Inspectre, Keep Your Hands Off Izuken, Rurouni Kenshin, Konosuba, Bungo Stray Dogs, Berserk, Cabinary of the Iron Fortress, Kill la Kill, Your Lie in April, Erased, Keys Kniver, Schwarzenmarken. There's right there. It's the whole reason to sign up for Schwarzenmarken. 91 Days, The Testimony of Sister New Devil, Season 1 and 2, and Roko Brave of Six Flowers. Those are all really fantastic titles.
I was going to say a few of them
are really
good.
Schwarzenmarken?
Yeah. And most of them are really solid stories. I mean, ReZero by itself, I could see a lot of people getting... really drawn in with that one.
In addition, Hunter x Hunter and Death Note anime will be available on the service within 1 year of its launch. That's kind of a weird thing to state. But then again, yeah, all the Ghibli titles too. So they're coming out with a bang for their HBO Max service. So good stuff there. Good stuff there. Leveraging all their popular titles, I guess. Right. Crunchyroll has added City Hunter to anime to their catalog, so if you're a fan of that old title, you can definitely check it out on Crunchyroll now. A new trailer has been released for Wit Studios' Great Pretender anime. It's set to premiere on Netflix in Japan in June. They kind of technically schedule them in cases, so the first case is episode 1 through 5 on June 2nd. Case 2, which is episodes 6 through 10, on June 9th. Case 3, which is episode 11 through 14, on June 16th. And then they list case 4 as an unknown amount of episodes and to be announced. So, really like the actual trailer for it. It actually looks really good. I think they did a fantastic job with the trailer. Very doodada-ish. I know the guy that worked on it, they have a character artist from Evangelion on there. Of course, being Wit Studio is a good, solid studio working on it. A lot of good people working on this one. Trailer looks fantastic. I'm actually really excited for it. Unfortunately, again, Netflix does technically damper it quite a bit. The synopsis is Makoto Edamura is supposedly Japan's greatest swindler. Together with his partner, Kudo, they try to trick a Frenchman in Asakusa, but unexpectedly get tricked instead. The Frenchman, whom they try to swindle, turns out to be Laurent Therry, a much high level confidence man in control of the mafia. Edamura is yet to find out what fate awaits him after having engaged in the Frenchman's dirty jobs. But yeah, like I said, it looks really good. Looks really, really good. Love the visual style. Animation looks quirky. Has that kind of fun aspect to it. So, definitely looks good. The director for 91 Days and My Little Monster. Oh, that's not good. I was like, he's cool-headed. No, My Little Monster was okay. I'm thinking of the other one. Hiro Kaburagi is going to be directing it. So, cool stuff. Definitely looking forward to that one. I just lost my place. Next, we have a new website reveals Suburaya production and Trigger's new SSSS Dina Zenon anime. This one is listed as part of the Gridman universe. Akira Amemiya is returning to direct it at Studio Trigger. So, more awesome SSS Gridman type show, I guess. Not really much information going for it, but they said it's apparently tied in with the Gridman universe, and yeah. We'll see how that one turns out. I really enjoyed SSS Gridman, so looking forward to possibly more of it. Possible sequel for it.
Yeah, when I seen it, I was like, well, either this is a Gridman show, or they just like the SSSS thing.
Yeah, is that going to be like a thing going forward? Is SSSS Gridman to Kill a Kill or something? We'll see. But yeah, that's pretty awesome. Like I said, I really enjoyed Gridman, SSSS Gridman. So I'm looking forward to possibly maybe more within that quote-unquote universe. Or that style, at least. I did enjoy. Promo has been released for Super Cub Motorbike Anime, being dubbed by Studio Kai. The Honda Motor Company, of course, is going to be supervising the series because it's based on the Honda Super Cub. The novel story centers around Koguma, a high school girl in Yamanashi. She has no parent, friends, or hobbies, and her daily life is empty. One day, Koguma gets a used Honda Super Cub motorcycle. This is her first time going to school on the motorcycle. Running out of gas and hitting detours become a small source of adventure in Koguma's life. She is satisfied with this strange transformation, but her classmate, Reiko, ends up talking to her about how she also goes to school by motorbike. One Super Cub begins to open up this lonely girl's world, introducing her to new everyday life and friendship. I was so funny because when I was watching the trailer, I was like, this feels very Yashike. But I'm sure the moment that, you know, you start getting a, you know, group of them together is probably going to turn more into something like those bike club shows that we've talked about in the past. But yeah, the trailer was very, very, very Yashike-ish. Very laid back, quiet type trailer. So
who knows? Just driving around the road.
Yep, might be a good relaxing show. We'll see. I don't think they have a slated release for it, so we'll see. Moving on. Former vice president of business development at Viz Media, Rob Perida, I'm guessing is how you pronounce his name, has been listed as head of anime editorial and publishing at Netflix in Tokyo. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's interesting to see a person from formerly from Viz Media hopping over the water to Netflix. We'll see if that's something they find to be possibly beneficial for them to maybe stream as a show is airing.
Please.
The only reason I'm bringing up this article, because I really don't know anything about this guy, and I don't know what effect that's going to have, is so that if somebody is like, dude, I used to go with Rob in high school, used to have so much fun at the arcades, I think I'm going to call him up to tell him to stream worldwide as a show is released every episode. Stop series dumping and just do per episode. What's up, Rob? Remember those cool times at the skate club? eat pizza all the time until we got sick.
Oh, yeah,
sick
the Otaku Spirit guys, they wanted it all one at a time.
I don't know what this anime stuff is. I just accidentally hit this one show when they were talking about you. They really wanted you to episode by episode release shows on worldwide. Everybody else is doing it. I mean, come on, Netflix. What? Crunchyroll knows how to subtitle and release a show per episode, but you can't figure out that technology? That's pretty weak, Netflix.
And you just laid out the gauntlet.
I mean, Funimation's doing it. I hate their app, Roberts, but come on. If Funimation could do it, Netflix surely can figure out how to
create this new technology. What's worse is we already know they're subtitling in Japan. We already know it.
Yeah, they did it for
Just flip Evergarden. The switch. Let it go to everybody.
Yeah, Violet Evergarden knows that way. Even Europe got... Was it Europe? Somewhere in Europe, I think, got Violet Evergarden. Anyways. No long-running joke. The Peggies and Hauka are set to perform the theme songs for Rent-A-Girlfriend. So another reason why I'll probably enjoy Rent-A-Girlfriend a lot is because the music's going to be fantastic. So I can't wait for that show. It's coming in July. Got really cute girls in it. Got Aoyuki in it. Got Ria Takahashi in it. You got Peggy's. You got Hauka. Looks like cute animation, cute characters. I mean, this is going to be probably a... If it releases in July, it will be a fantastic show. Has all the makings of a fantastic show. I'm not looking into this too much. I'm not going to mention much to it because I've already seen the spoiler. So I'm just going to say Inuyasha's gets a new Yasuhime Princess Half Demon TV spinoff this fall. This has been confirmed by Viz. So if you're a fan of Inuyasha, look forward to that spinoff series getting an anime adaptation. Really exciting, though. Really looking forward to that. New trailer has been released for Uzaki-chan Wants to Hang Out. It's funny because the trailer is like a minute and 50 minutes, and I think I watched the entire show. So if you want to watch the entire show of Uzaki-chan Wants to Hang Out, you pretty much get it. I mean, I think they have the beach episode in there. I think they do the fireworks episode in there. Tons of stuff, like all in the same episodes. I did get a huge kick out of the fact that the main girl is definitely Kiriha from Sugamomo, which, yeah, that's a really inappropriate shot right there. It looks like it's going to have a lot of adult humor, so if you like the more adult humor, like Sensei Why You Here, Sensei, or where that one was, the teacher Why You Here.
Yeah, I think.
Anyways, you get my point. Very adult, so. Yep. She looks like a dork. Looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely looks like a fun character to mess around with. It's premiering in July, so look forward to that. And like I said, if you just want to watch the whole show, you can just watch the trailer. Literally, it looks like most of the trailer. Next, Mitsubishi Colors, the manga, is ending in two chapters in July, or in June, on June 27th. So that one will be coming to conclusion.
Aww.
That is one that I don't think has an English release, does it? It needs one. Back to Demon Slayer. Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba manga story is coming to a climax with its chapter releasing on May 11th. So looks like they're getting to the climax of that story. Cool stuff. Some quick delays that are coming due to COVID. We had Vlad Love, which was the series that I think technically has a really solid team behind it that I was actually pretty excited for. That was that one that had like the contest to figure out who the voice was for the character, which was kind of cool. But yeah, unfortunately that one is seeing a delay until fall. Or it was previously planned for fall. It's now delayed until further notice. Bungo and Alchemist, episode 5 through 7, is scheduled for late May. My Team Romantic Comedy Snafu Season 3 has been rescheduled to July officially. The Quintessential Quintuplet second season has been delayed until January 2021. They're just getting the hell out of there. They're just like, 2020? Nope, we're out of here. And unfortunately, probably the biggest saddest news for the recent news for COVID is that father of Jinu Ibuchi, who was Shu Wada, has passed away at the age of 81 due to COVID. So our thoughts and prayers out to Jinu Ibuchi, who has created some fantastic work for. I'm not familiar much with what Shu Wada has done. I know he's done a lot of stage stuff like that, but very unfortunate to hear, though. Definitely sucks. Let's see here. But the, I guess, to get back into more positive news, not to degrade that, we have pretty much some confirmations on some shows that have been officially announced that they are completed in production, which includes BNA, which doesn't mean anything to us because we can't watch it anyways. But I think they did like a celebration thing with BNA. They released like 5 episodes for Celebration or something like that on Netflix in Japan, not here. Art, apparently.
Because they hate us. Yeah, Netflix hates us. I think they do it just to spite us now.
He knew that I don't like Trigger shows much and that that was what I was excited for. Just ripped it right out of my hands. Art, or Arte, however you want to say it, has been completed. Ascendance of a Bookworm, second season. Of course, Dropkick on My Devil Dash, because they technically released the entire thing onto streaming services. My Next Life as a Villainess, Sing Yesterday for Me. Unfortunately, even though that is Dokokobo, they fortunately have completed Sing Yesterday for Me, but they unfortunately put an end to, or at least suspended for, My Daily Life is at the Breakwater. Our Daily Life is at the Breakwater. Daily Diary of Our Days at the Breakwater. I forget how to say that show. And finally, Tower of God and Kaguya-sama Love of War are nearly completed, but they have not said they are complete on those ones. So, good stuff. And I guess to get in some gaming news, Xbox did a quote-unquote gameplay showcase, and that wasn't very interesting whatsoever. The one thing I did like about that, again, I'm just going to call it showcase. I'm not going to call it a gameplay showcase. The one thing I did like about it is that it seemed like they had a good, I mean, they had a Namco Bandai game, like a very cel-shaded anime type game in there, which was very surprising. Typically with something like that, you're just going to see, you know, shooters, sports, race car games. Here's our starting lineup. Got to have a shooter, got to have a racing game, and got to have a sports game. So to see some representation of, you know, more Asian Japanese type games was really fantastic. Seeing the Bandai Namco game, they had like a crazy looking Silent Hill looking game, which I think was created by a Chinese writer. I don't remember, but that looked fantastic. But yeah, nothing really screamed by me. That's definitely for sure. Nothing saying here's next gen by me.
That's all right. If you stop and consider this, this is the first time Andrew has ever looked at a generation and went, I don't have anything to buy. Because I had mentioned the other day,
well, they're not selling it. When they're all saying you can just play your games on your current consoles, like, what the hell? I buy your console, then I'm just gonna.
Yeah, I was talking about stealing a PC. Stealing his PS4 the other day, and he's like, or when he gets a new PS5, and he's like, I don't think I'm going to buy a PS5. I'm like, oh, crap.
Why would I buy it? I mean, and I guess the big unfortunate thing is like, one, they're not selling people on it. They're not going, hey, about the only thing I've seen so far that actually impressed me was the moment they showed, and again, this is something that, I mean, technically could have been in consoles a long time ago. They do it in other things. It was the moment that they showed with the Xbox, what is it called? The Series X? I think that's what they're calling it. I don't know what they're calling it. The new Xbox.
They're trying going out of their way not to have any weird
way. Xbox.
Yeah,
Sex.
Yeah.
They'll get it every time. They suck at that. I mean, that's what I was joking with him. It's like, Xbox or Microsoft just has no luck with this, because what happened when the Xbox One came out? The big joke was the TV, sports. That was a joke. And now they have another meme out for them, which is quote-unquote gameplay. It's like every time they do, and it was terrible because they had, like, the whole presentation was done, like, and this is this ongoing joke right now where all these celebrities and stuff are all trying to figure out the internet and how to stream themselves. So they all have, like, the crappiest webcams, the worst microphones, and it's like you did a professional Microsoft, like, here is the launch lineup showcase. Like, this is what we're going to have on the system. And they're all recording with, like, the crappiest webcam. It's like, Microsoft, with all of its money, couldn't go, let's send them like a good microphone. Let's send them a good camera. Have them record themselves. Give them a piece of paper that tells them step by step on how to hook up the plugs and set it up on their desk and record themselves. And I don't mean to see like people come into their homes when they're trying to, you know, social distance, but they can send them a package that says, leave this on your doorstep for the next 24 hours and then bring it to your home and then do these steps to make a good audio and visual recording of yourself for our launch thing. Couldn't do it. Instead, let's just use the webcam that's on your iMac, you Microsoft employee. Anyways, I was totally sidetracked. But no, the only thing impressive I've seen so far is when Microsoft, when they were doing this thing where they had, you know, they were bringing in people to show them like the inside of the new Xbox and everything, is they showed the suspend one game and resume another game. Like they were literally playing that weird, I don't know what the hell that game is, the one that was based off of like Heavenly Blade, and they made some other one. Anyways, it was like this crazy third person, looks like, you know, Tomb Raider-ish graphics. Look visually beautiful. He's climbing up some stairs. And then they suspend it, and then they click on Ori and the Blind Forest, and they're playing Ori and the Blind Forest, like, instantly. I'm like, there, that's something that shows me, hey, we finally figured out how SSDs work, and look, we can do this now. That was something next-gen. That was something that, yeah, you can probably modify to do on a PC, but there's not... The only thing we have close to that is the, you know, the Switch, where you can resume your game, like, boom, like that. So... Yeah. Speaking of Switch, amidst the COVID crisis, Nintendo has reported 7.4% increase in their sales for the fiscal year 2020. This is up until March 31st, I think. So, I mean, that's like not even including last month and this month. So that's, they probably seen a crap ton of sales that last week or so. They reported that the Switch has reached 55.77 million Switches sold. And for the Animal Crossing New Horizon, which we knew was going to sell like crazy because that like literally released right when the COVID social distancing stuff really started kicking off and the stay home stuff started happening, sold 11.77 million units in its first 11 days. That's a million units a day. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
What did I say at the beginning of this? If you can get your game out, now would be the time to do it. And This is why.
And it was really successful with the streamers. And I think that probably helped it a lot, too. That you had a lot of... Because it's a very streamer-friendly game where you can actually stop your character and talk to people and not have to worry about, you know, getting blasted by a monster or driving into a wall or something like that. So it really does lend itself to that. And it has a very community aspect to it. So it definitely did... It was a good game for its time, like perfect timing for it. So
that's all right. I'm trying to avoid it like the plague. So
yeah, I did New Leaf and I got bored real quick. So I don't see myself.
Well, I'm afraid of getting stuck in it. It looks like absolute candy for me. So
like every other building type game that you play every other day, Satisfactory, your Minecraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got way too much time in Minecraft. It's scary how much time I've got in Minecraft.
I got away from that one really quickly. Dragon Quest Builder is the only one where I kind of went with it, so I really enjoyed that. Congratulations, though, Nintendo. That's very cool. Thanks for giving us... And that's one of the cool things. Yeah, technically, companies are out to make money, so it's not like I'm patting them on the back or anything like that, but definitely do appreciate a lot of these games that are probably giving people a lot of sanity right now. Games that give people plenty to do while they're stuck at home.
I seen a meme at some point of somebody side by side of a person in COVID lockdown and then a gamer in COVID lockdown, and of course the gamer's like, yeah. Yeah,
I seen the one was before COVID, and it was a picture of Maro-chan playing in front of a TV, and then it said after COVID, Maro-chan playing in front of the TV. It's like us gamers and streamers were like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I technically am getting a little stir crazy not being able to kind of communicate with people or just leave the house when I want to, but technically do have plenty to do. Let's see here. That's it for the news. That seems important to us. That should be important to you because it's important to us. dive into our community. I had some great questions from our community members, which went to otakuspirit.com, went to the forums up there, clicked the link, went to the Anime Cast question thread and posted a question there and probably stuck around and talked to some people, which is fantastic. Well, they went to the contact us button at the top of otakuspirit.com, leave it there, email andrew@otakuspirit.com. Plenty of ways you can contact us to give us questions, like Blue Spark did. Sorry, Blue Stark, we're finally going to answer this very controversial question that I told everybody to expect the next discussional podcast. But Blue Spark asks, who's the best animal sidekick / side character anime? And no, cat girls don't count.
Do me a favor and look up Sankareya.
Sankareya, dying love.
I want the name of the cat.
The cat. And Sankareya.
Oh, bought it.
Undying love. Babu.
Babu, okay.
So it's Babu?
Yeah. I was going to wait until you got to the answer part. Babu was the first one that came to... I've got a big kick out of Babu, and I think he is just an awesome cat, so... I don't like cats.
I like the bird from Tamako Market.
He was totally a butt.
Thought I was going to despise him, and I absolutely loved him by probably episode 3 or so. I don't remember exactly when I fall from it, but of course, the best animal sidekick of all time is Hollow. Yes, you did say cat girls don't count, but you did not say fox girls don't count.
She's not a fox girl; she's a wolf.
Oh, wolf girl. There you go. Harvest God. Yeah. Didn't say wolf girl. So there you go. Anyways, but like not actual anthropomorphized characters, I'm guessing is what you're trying to get at. It's like these are, you know, a cat character or something like Gigi from Kiki's Delivery Service, which I actually really liked. I don't like mascot characters typically. Like usually whenever a show or even a video game has that mascot character that is obviously a mascot character that was obviously created by that company to sell plushies, I cringe. Like, it's like, oh, there's the side character, the mascot character. Okay, whatever. Get off the screen already. But no, my longest running favorite was probably Ryoki. Ryoki was like, that was a mascot character or a animal sidekick character that I wanted to have like stickers of and plushies of. And, I technically have two of Kinoki. I had a Ryoki. I don't know what happened to it. I think it was in my old car.
And it's so funny, the person who says that they hate mascot characters can name off a whole bunch of them. I'm sitting here going,
I had to look up a couple of them. I didn't remember Dara's name from Tamako Market. Taramaro was awesome, but that's because Taramaro from Scoldiv was awesome. Pen from Evangelion was a fun character that technically was kind of comical.
My point is I had to think of Babu. I mascot characters are some of those that, I mean, the next one that comes to my mind is actually one that I absolutely despise, and that would be Excalibur. And it's really because he just stood out so much and how much I despised him. So I think a mark of a good mascot character is usually that they're not that so annoying that they, you know, overwhelm the entire show. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of like Babu, is Babu was kind of this, he was mischievous in a way, but at the same time, he wasn't annoying with it. He just was like, look at what Babu is doing. Babu is boss, you know, that's just because he was just an awesome character. And that's to me a good mark.
Technically, when you say the person that does like mascot characters name off a lot, I technically spent quite a while putting this list together. So don't get me wrong. I try to make an effort of trying to go through these questions beforehand so that I don't sit here and
teasing.
Go, let me look at the walls. Cause that's usually what we do whenever we don't, like, pre-set up a question. It's looking up to the left, up to those manga. Oh, look at those light novels over there. Up above us, we have some Blu-rays. Looking over the right, there's some more Blu-ray limited editions. The walls, some pictures. It looks at the figures.
Can Gohan be considered a mascot character?
No.
Or would Krillin be considered a mascot
animal
character?
Sidekick character, not necessarily people. I thought you would like the wolves from Princess Mononoke. Those were some awesome wolves.
Yeah, they were pretty cool.
I jokingly put in there Tora. Mushu and Tora.
He would count.
Humbarkers. Yeah, that's... Oh, we totally... Should we mention that one?
Which one?
The evil cat thing from a certain magical show. I don't know. I don't know if that's all that best. I think technically, Kyubey is a good character, but not necessarily something I want to call a best psychic or psych character. Bad thing. So yeah, that's some fun ones. Let's see here. An awesome dude says, have you ever, in your anime watching career, grew tired of seeing certain tropes, cliches, and pop up in shows? Tropes and cliches aren't inherently bad, but I feel some shows take the easy way out and use them in a very uninspired way. I'm in sort of a slump when it comes to watching anime at the moment, as I'm getting tired of seeing characters adhere to such tropes and are forced to conform into their archetypes. On one hand, that it's these tropes that make anime what it is, but on the other hand, see it enough times and you'll either get used to it or grow tired of it, seeing it them all the time.
We did a long time ago, and this is not saying please don't ask us these questions, but we did do an entire discussion on that.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about when I read through preemptively on this question, I thought about it and I was like, you know what's really starting to get to me lately?
What's really getting to you lately, Chris?
I am so tired of these.
What?
And it's not most of the time tropes I can kind of ignore to a point, but recently it's been kind of bugging me when people point out the fact that they have no parents. It's like, how is the entire world in Japan has no parents whatsoever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, episode 25, that's going back. That one's going to be a rough episode. Why we have tropes, episode 25. And that's where we kind of got into the idea of like how it can be used as a creative tool to kind of make things easier for really kicking off a story or a shortcut in a way of getting around developing certain things.
And that is a lot of it. Is
familiarity is another big aspect of why tropes and archetypes exist, as the viewer or reader can have familiarity there. Like the tsundere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You understand how a tsundere is. You understand their motivations, why they do the things they do. Why? Because you know what a tsundere is.
It's always going to come down to what they do with it. And I think we kind of made that point in that particular podcast episode, too. That's way back there, so I'm not sure what all we end up talking about. But I'm pretty sure we kind of, if we didn't, here you can get it here, is it's really important to know that when there's archetypes and stuff in there, it is an easy way for them to get out of things. It is a shortcut, but at the same time, it's always about what they do with it. Because technically nothing in creativity is technically new. It's all reused stuff. It's reused aspects and storytelling beats. I mean, how many times are you going to watch a show where a character's parents died? It's what they do with it that is what's important. And that's always the thing. Like the isekai is a big thing right now. What do we always say? It's not about if it's an isekai or not. It's what they do in that isekai that ends up being, did this show turn out great or not? I don't care if the guy isekai'd. I want to know what the story it's telling is good. And so, yeah, I technically can say that for me, it's not isekais. It's the OP character in isekais. I think that is probably the one right now that I'm growing tired of. So, like, right now you have the eighth son. Are you kidding me? I roll my eyes the moment he starts being super powerful. It's like, I don't really care. He takes on a big dragon. I roll my eyes and go, okay, what are you going to do else? What else are you going to do in this particular story? That's what I'm looking for. In another world with my smartphone, didn't do it for me. What was the recent one that I said I was joking that was similar to... Was that the Eighth Son?
Eighth Son.
It was the one that's kind of similar to Wise Man's Grandchild. That one was like, phew, you got to do something else. Like, I don't really care about seeing. No, it was the girl, Shielder girl. I don't like pain, so I put all my points in defense or whatever that one was. That one was definitely like that wise man grandchild where every 2 seconds we had to go, oh, Sugoi, look what she did. Oh, Sugoi, look what she did. I need something else besides. So the, I guess the trope that you're, if you're asking me what a trope right now that I'm getting tired of is the overpowered character. I need to have something else in there. It needs to be like Overlord where there's an aspect of him trying to figure out things in the world. It's got to be like Slime where it's building a nation and trying to appease certain groups and bring people together. It's got to have something there that I can latch onto besides them being overpowered. I don't care that they're overpowered. I don't care that they can shoot beams out their eyeballs. I want to see what they do with the beams is really the thing. So, yeah. My other one is, and this has been a while. This isn't a new thing. I've always hated derpy face characters. Kakaguri was very difficult for me to get through. They had the derpy characters that look overly, I don't know, like they are enjoying themselves a lot. Or they either that or they have the crazy, I'm psychotic thing. Like, a recent example is Darwin's Game. The moment the, I forget what his name was. He was voiced by Kirito, too. The quote-unquote bad guy of the of this, technically this story arc of Darwin's Game, the recent anime adaptation. The moment his tongue came flying out and his tongue's wagging around as he's talking, I'm checking out. Like, okay, I understand. This is the bad guy. The moment the character comes out and he's talking with his tongue hanging out of his mouth, you know they're a bad, bad guy. Like, I don't need you to do that for me to know that he's a bad guy.
No, he's bad.
Because he's so bad, he didn't listen to his mom when she said, don't talk with your tongue hanging out of your mouth, I guess. I don't know. I hate the overly, I guess, overly animated
he's
face
so bad.
To show how
he's
evil
so bad
they are.
He doesn't lick the blood off of the knife. He wraps his tongue around.
Oh yeah,
the
that's
knife.
A real bad when their tongue can wrap around a very big knife. That's when you know they're super bad. But yeah, every time, and it always bugs me whenever I'm watching the show and I'm enjoying it. And like I said, I've always hated the idea. Here's, I guess, another one. I don't like when a show inserts a bad guy for the sake of having a bad guy at the end of a story. So when you have a show and it gets to the very end of it, I think I had this problem with Aiko Reincarnated. The very end of the show, like the last one or two episodes towards the end, suddenly out of nowhere, it's almost like the writer said, we need a bad guy. And they just like looked around and then they just pointed at somebody and said, you're going to be the bad guy. And then suddenly that guy gets crazy and psycho character going on. And it's like, okay, I get it. He's super bad. He's a very bad guy. And yeah, it's like, it doesn't need that. The story doesn't need to have that. You don't have to have that climactic battle against big bad guy at the very end. You could just end it. You have a good story here. Just end it. Be happy. But yeah. And the last one I wrote down here was the whole we can't do this again because the terrible thing that happened the year before trope.
That's true.
Tell me how a girls' school baseball, whatever that one was that we just recently did a first impressions of for this season. We were joking about the fact that show did that. Not to say that it's a bad show, but that trope that we don't like is that whole, hey, come join us. And they look at them like, no, and then you're like, oh crap, they're gonna have like some backstory where previous year somebody died, and it never
and we,
is anything
and we always end up joking about it because every time they do that it's like, oh my gosh, seriously, you guys make it sound like, I mean, the first one that actually did kind of okay at that was the two boys Batterbox or whatever.
Well, Battery was in that year, though. It wasn't technically a story about a previous year.
But even that, it was still, okay.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It was kind of bad. But the way they make it sound, I mean, they'll sit there and they'll go on and on and on and on and on and on and on about how bad the last year was. And when you find out what it was like, that was really bad. Really? I mean, seriously?
It makes it more funny, the idea that I think back to my days in high school and junior high and stuff, it's like, yeah, you technically had like some bully stuff that happened or something pretty rough happened between two people or a group of people or two groups, you know, bumped heads. But it's like, but by the next year, I don't freaking care. Like, I had summer and everything to get over that.
Half the time, you moved on people from it the next month. So
yeah, I mean, by summer, I've done forgotten about it. Moving on. I mean, you're holding a huge grudge there. Kind of had to move on.
And that's not to say that kids don't blow things out of proportion. Yeah. They do, but at the same time, it's not like it's something that travels on for that amount of time and. Avoiding people like the plague because of they dropped Jimmy's eraser and Angela picked up Jimmy's eraser instead of Delia. I mean, okay, move on.
Yeah, like the archetypes, I don't really. It is a very curious question of why I don't mind archetypes anymore, because I think it was definitely something that I was bugged by when I got back into anime. I mean, when we first started Talk of Spirit, I think it was like Chris was watching all the shows and I was watching very few of them, because if I watched the first episode and seen something that was very kind of archetypey or very tropish, I usually kind of it turned me away from it. I was looking for something that was always fresh, and I guess it was at that point where I kind of came to a decision to kind of flesh out things, and that's where I get my mindset of, okay, you open with these tropes, these archetypes, what are you going to do with them? And that's where I guess the shift happened in my mind. And I'm not saying that you have to do this, because if you're burnt out, just take a break from it, that's fine. But my mentality, the way that I look at them, is I often look at them as, okay, you've introduced the tropes in this first episode, now what are you going to do? Or what, okay, you got that first volume manga punchline out there. Now, what's the second volume going to be in this anime adaptation? And that's really what I'm looking for, is that long end journey that is beyond those initial, brunt of tropes and archetypes that, like we've mentioned before, is this concept of really kind of creating familiarity and getting around a lot of introductions that they don't really technically have to do. Or just always look for those diamonds that are out there that are technically not relying on those tropes. There's plenty of them out there. This season, unfortunately, most of them are delayed, so you can't really watch any of them. I think a lot of the stuff that is remaining aren't, but there's some really good gems out there that don't technically rely on it. I don't think Kaguya Sama Love of War is really technically relying on tropes. I don't think something like, Tsugumomo is definitely relying on a lot of tropes, but it technically does some different things as well. The other one that we really... Ascendant of the Bookworm, there's no tropes in that show. It's literally just relying on its own storytelling to go with. So there's plenty of options out there. You just got to find them. And if those tropes are bothering you, there's no reason to keep staying on them and letting it bog you down. Sometimes you do need a break. I needed a break at some point. So, yeah. That it?
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Let's see here. Uki Sog says, Isekai came a long way, so I would like your opinion on what you think will come next of the genre. For now, it evolved like this. The positions might be different. I tried to look into this, but it's still hard. P.S. Some of these didn't reach anime yet. One, normal Isekai. Two, multiple Isekais, where multiple people are Isekai'd from a class or school. Isekai as animal, monster, or object. The Otome Isekai, Revenge Isekai, where dying in Isekai, usually betrayer, and returning to the time you were Isekai'd and getting revenge for betrayal. That's a very interesting specific Isekai. And finally, Isekai'd and deciding to live a peaceful life while being OP at something. Of course, there are some also Isekai save the world and return to its previous how his life is. This one is scarcer. I don't know exactly the position to where to place it. P.S. By Isekai, I mean reincarnated or transported. And PSSS Gridman Isekai is a game. Isekai to a game account as the same as normal Isekai.
Ooh. Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. I think that you missed the original origins of this entire thing, which is the trapped in a game genre. That came out like a million years ago.
No, there's ones before then, too, like Dunbine and stuff. I will note that a lot of the older Isekai shows...
That's true.
Were technically multiple people. I think the normal single-person Isekai was definitely one that came later. But most of the older Isekais... that I recall anyway, were technically multiple people. So that isn't technically a newer thing. Not to nitpick your list here. I'm just saying that's
memory. What was that market one? Didn't they take the entire market and then the girl and the boy went out on adventures while they were there?
It was just them two. Aniobashi?
Yeah.
I think that was just them two.
But didn't the others keep popping up in the their adventure?
So long. I don't know if that was a thing where it was just a parallels of themselves or if they were actually with them or not. It's been so long. I can't remember. Was it Magical Arcade
or that's
Magical
right.
Shopping mm-hmm. Aninobashi? Aninobashi? Magical Shopping Arcade Aninobashi. Okay.
Such a
yeah, it's funny because it's like... I get a kick out of the fact that there's such a surge right now in the isekais to an animal, monster, or object. Yeah, the moment I found out that there's an isekai where a person isekais as an onsen, I knew that the world was ending. I mean, even the vending machine one was okay. Like, I hear that there's a isekai as and reincarnated as a vending machine. And I was like, okay, that's weird, but okay, I'll move on. And they're like, oh yeah, there's also an onsen one. I'm like, okay, we're doomed. This is it. But yeah, like the spider one, all those other ones are really kind of starting to creep up right now. It's like they got, which is fun again. It's that idea that they, it does definitely feel like, okay, we've seen enough of the person going to another world and they're a person and they're doing something. And now to have this kind of ability to almost, get this same effect as an isekai going into another world, but also kind of exploring the mechanics of a creature there, or a slime, or a spider, or an onsen.
Well, the sword worked for me. I mean, yeah, it was kind of weird, but okay, I can go with it. The Dagum going as a vending machine. And then when they explained it to me, I was like, I guess I could go with it. I mean, I guess he's got some lady who carries him around mm-hmm. or something like that. Okay, I guess I can go with it. But the onsen, there ain't no moving. I mean, it's okay, so you're literally just going, the only thing that you can do there is just go ahead and go on about how people are sitting in your water. That's gonna be the gist of the story.
I think what I got the gist of was what is pretty much this idea of having a lot of adventurers coming back to the onsen and actually and probably explain their stories while they're in him.
Probably, yeah.
You're getting stories told by the girls, obviously, that are probably coming to visit the onsen. So that was kind of where I was getting it.
Which would be kind of like the diner in another world that they did a couple of. Yeah, ago.
So you're bringing the stories in rather than going out to the stories. The revenge isekai is weird. I'm curious to find out if that's a thing. Like, there's what you're listing here as being something of a trend leads me to believe that there is a surge of stories about people that die in an isekai and return to a time that you were isekai'd. And getting a revenge. So that's a very specific choice in story plot that sounds like it's been repeated multiple times. I don't know. I immediately, when I see revenge isekai, I thought of Shield Hero, but this is specifically somebody, you know, dying and then and doing it again or something. So that's very weird. I do see a crease of the isekai to live a peaceful life. I mean, we have that one that we talked about, I think, in the last podcast, the one that's getting adaptation right now, by the blessing of the gods or whatever that one was, where he went out there and was gathering slimes. Just looks very almost like Isekai meets Yashike, I guess. But no, trends. The biggest trend that we've seen here recently, in my opinion, was the rebuild Isekai, and I think we technically coined that term as the rebuild isekai, where you get the person gets isekai'd and then they use their own talents and skills to really truly cause a huge shaking. Yes, technically with a lot of the older ones, you do have a lot of cases where it's a hero who causes change through their actions, but it's usually always because they defeated a bad thug, and thus that village was, you know, free. It's not tech. It's not the, you know, slime where he's building an entire nation, or it's the prodigies have it easy in another life, where they're technically building an economy and manipulating the economics of the structure and building a nation again in their own respects there as well. And it seems like there's a lot of those coming up here. I'm thinking Eighth Son is going to do the same thing. I'm hoping, because I need something.
Yeah,
I need something besides,
well, that was kind of the
novels that, dancing around each other.
I think I see something there, but it's not really going in that direction. So I don't know. I hope it does, but yeah, it's one of those.
But I do think for a while there, it felt like for the last couple of years, rebuilding Sekai was, yeah, technically part of it's me enjoying those a lot more than the rest of them. So maybe that's why they stand out so much for me as a trend. But it did seem like that was, besides the Isekai'd as a different object or monster, which was definitely a thing with slime and what was the other one?
Oh, well, we called the rebuild of Sekai way back in what was that one? The one where the guy went to another world as a secret government project, and he ended up where we got a big old kick. Outbreak company.
Yeah.
So we called it way back then.
I don't necessarily think that I had coined it then. I think I would coined it really with slime.
Well, no, I didn't say you coined it. We called it back then. We were the first ones to notice, hey, this is a thing. No.
Yeah. Technically,
see, y'all are ahead of the game by listening to us.
Technically, Overlord's turning into a rebuilding Sekai.
Yeah, it did.
Recently, it seems like it's going that direction. And like I said, I really do enjoy that, because it really does seem like it's kind of shifting. It's of course, with Overlord, it's also only an OP character, but it's doing something, and that's the kind of thing that it seems like it's shifting into, I guess, is the thing. Wild predictions on what they could do with Isekai going forward. I would like more Iyashike Sekais. I think those would be a kind of refreshing thing, because there's a lot of fascinating things you could do with that. Something in the similar vein is something without, you know, like Made in Abyss, without the more darker aspects of it. It really does. I mean, it technically isn't, because they're part of the same world in a sense, but the Force Spirit and the girl in the Force Spirit. What the heck was that show called? The big golem
Soma?
Dude.
Somana,
Somali, and the Force Spirit, Force Golem. I don't know. Somali, that show. That one also had that kind of whimsicalness to it. That could have been, is in that same vein. Something that is has the mood and the calmness, not with, you know, Somali being crazy and running around in circles, but more the explorative and visual and adventurous aspects of an Isekai, but with more of a Iyashike, calming, relaxing, healing type element. I think that would be a cool route for them to take with the Isekais. But to throw the wild one out there, we've actually had several Isekai out of Isekais, so I can't really say that is going to be a trend. Maybe it's something that can come back, I guess. That is an option. Isekai into a mecha world. That would be interesting. We always get Isekai. I would like more Isekais to other settings. Would be a good one. It always seems like they rely a lot on fantasy. You know, ogres, dragons, medieval times. You don't really see many cases of them being Isekai into, I don't know, maybe a future setting. Or possibly further back besides medieval times. Different settings of medieval times would be great. It seems like they rely a little bit too much on goblins and dragons. So that would be a
fun. Isekai into hell.
Yeah.
So. I bet you it's been done. Don't even. I have a feeling it's been done.
Monogatari. He actually technically died. Well, it's technically, there's a difference between being isekai'd into hell and actually dying going to hell. So I guess we should make that a difference there.
Well, I was automatically thinking of isekai'ing into the real world, and then I automatically thought of the devil is a part-timer, so obviously it's been done. And then I was like, holy crap, man, why not do the
reverse? Yeah, that's that whole, almost feels like a reverse type aspect, is the whole kind of coming out and going back in the real world element. Mix in there as well.
It's hard to say where I would like to see isekai go right now. I kind of actually am in enjoying right now. Right now is the perfect time. They've got a whole bunch of really cool ideas coming out, and so I'm not really into the idea of isekai changing right now. I mean, where would I guess I'd like a couple more harems, but I like it right now. And eventually I'm not going to have my isekais that are doing the world building right now.
it is fast. I mean, we joked about the idea that it's, I mean, technically in a grander scheme, it's not as if there is, you know, half the anime coming out right now as isekai. It's probably more like two or three a season lately, but there is going to be a time where it will see the same burnout that they had with Mecha. I remember, man, back in the day, you used to have Mecha, like, at least three shows were Mecha in a season. And everybody was getting mad because there was too many Mecha shows. And people that liked Mecha were like, I don't care, we're enjoying it. And I think that's going to be the same thing that's going to happen here, is that eventually they are going to have this kind of burnout with the Sekais. But I don't think it's going to happen as quick, because with the concept of Isekai, there's an inherent element to it that keeps it fresh. Yeah, technically you could do different things with Mecha, but it's still a Mecha fighting other Mechas. With an Isekai, it's going to different worlds. It's telling different stories in those different worlds. It can have different settings. I mean, with an Isekai, you can have a food porn show in a restaurant. You can have a Battle of the Dragon type show. You can have a comedy. You can have a yashike. You can have a cute story about a spirit and a golem, which, again, that's not technically isekai, but it feels almost like it. Whereas Mecha, it's always going to be about either an arms war or arms race about who can get the best Mecha, and then fighting against each other over and over again. Sometimes you can mix some really good, you know, love stories in there as well, but in the end, it's still just usually typically two robots fighting. And so there's more tools given to an isekai.
In a lot of cases, isekai, if you point out the difference, because people will always go, well, I'm so tired of the isekai because they're all doing the same thing. Set two of these next to each other. Put Gate right next to Slime and tell me how those two are the same. Put Grimgar Fantasy and Ash next to Diner in Another World. They're very different shows. Now, that does not mean that you can't put Gate right next to Outbreak Company and see similarities. I think that you're really pushing it to find similarities, but you put the two together, yeah, they're kind of otaku. Yeah, they're otaku, and they're both military going through a gate of some sort and into another world. So yeah, you could find similarities. But my point is if we've got a whole bunch of different ones coming out and they're attaching it in very different ways. Heck, I mean, what was the Overlord? If you didn't know it, you wouldn't even realize it's an isekai. I mean, it's technically a person gets trapped in a game, and it's not even really an isekai, but somehow, I mean, we're four seasons in, and you don't even really think about how it started at the very beginning of the game.
The weird thing about Overlord is I seem to remember it wasn't technically a VR game, because it showed him sitting in front of his computer, and I don't think he had a VR headset on. I think he just got trapped in there. But even with Overlord, a lot of that aspect was loss of humanity. Like, he is... And I don't know if it gets more deeper into it later on, but he's technically losing a lot of human emotion. He's getting more dark. He's getting more to be the Overlord. He's losing his humanity
his heart, a lot of that stuff's being lost. And that's when you get into that. That was the stuff that really got me. Like, the moment that it kind of hinted at that, I'm like, ooh, this is what I'm looking for. Like, what are they going to do with this? And, of course, then after that, I kind of just got into a lot of the characters that were the his kind of team of NPCs that he has. But yeah. So you don't want to see it change. You don't want to predict where it's going from here because you don't want it to change. Is that your answer?
Prediction to probably Otome right now. I think Villainous.
Maybe he already has Otome on there. It's already a thing.
I don't think it's really a thing yet.
I think he's
probably going off of visual novel.
Right. That's where he kind of mentioned at some point that was one of the things they were going by. And some of it's not technically being adapted yet, but they're there. Because that's like the Revenge Isekai. I have yet to see an entire. I don't recall any Isekai that is about somebody dying and then being Isekai'd back to getting a betrayer or whatever. I don't remember any of those. So that
would be the next on the list. So yeah, he's just a little bit ahead of us right now.
Well, the sixth one is the deciding to live a peaceful life. I've seen a couple of those.
Yeah, it's like the stuff that we're already seeing in the light novel world. It looks like the building or the into an object, because we've noticed that and we've gotten a kick out of some of them because they're just so random.
I don't know what I really want it to become. Like I said, I wouldn't be against having like an Ayashike here and there. Just because I think it's best fit for an Ayashike to have somebody. I think that's where you're kind of going with like the isekai and living a peaceful life. Like the one that we've talked about last podcast episode, the Blessing of the Gods one with the guy that is kind of just hanging out with, I don't know if that's an isekai though. It just might just be hanging out with slimes. But it lends itself well to it. But other than that, I guess I do enjoy a good reverse isekai. And we don't really see those often anymore, where you have knights or whatever getting isekai'd into, the modern day and that whole kind of shenanigans that can happen from that. I mean, you do technically have things like Dropkick on My Devil, where you're bringing, mythological creatures into the modern realm, or Mage Dragon, bringing dragons into a modern setting, but it lends itself to good comedy and possibly some good moments. I mean, Maid Dragon did great stuff, and I didn't think that was going to happen, but it did. So, yeah, I guess reverse isekai would be a fun one, which is technically still an isekai, but I'm just talking isekai into modern times, I guess, is the way to put it. So, I would like that. I've seen them in the past, but I would like to see more of it. I think it has the ability to be some fun stuff. But, yeah, that's I guess that's all the questions for the day. We are getting along. So we have one more left for Ukiyasog.
We have one huge one on the forums right now.
Oh, we have a huge one in there?
Oh, yeah.
It must have been...
We're going to have to break it up into many, many parts.
Like an entire episode for its own?
Probably.
Hachimaki, what the heck? What the... What is this? That's a novel.
He made four reports for us.
That's a novel.
We technically asked for it, so we can't complain.
After 3 years of reflection since my last questions, I managed to collect ideas for a long question for my senpai Tashi. Jeez.
Thank you. Maybe not save it up for 3 years.
Just post them as you get them. Yeah, that's gonna be like an episode on its own. So
yeah, see, this is what happens when you hold back. You end up with that. Just come on, guys. Just get them out there. Just get your questions out there. We got something we can do with them.
So should we just make a Hachimaki episode?
We're gonna have to.
Just title it Anime Cast Hachimaki. So, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, thanks for the questions, everybody. Thank you, Ukisog. Thank you, An Awesome Dude. Thank you, Blue Spark, as always, for the great questions. That makes these podcasts even more fun to do, getting new people included in here. And yeah, that's all we have. That's it. Let's tie things down. Again, we're from otakuspirit.com. It's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old, great community, the form links, top social media links, the right side, and all that good stuff. And we thank you all for listening. And again, as usual, thank you everybody who supports us through Patreon to help us pay for the hosting for this podcast, which is really greatly appreciated. Hope you all enjoyed and you all take care.
Os.
Stay safe.